Good evening, Dave.
Good evening, but I think you mean afternoon.
Yes.
So do you think we can start this show now?
I'm sorry, Dave. I'm afraid I can't do that.
Hey, no playing games. We've got to get this thing started. But look, before you go, let me just ask you, how do you think the show's going?
I think you've improved a great deal.
Oh, that's great. So do you think we can start now?
Yes.
I've seen dead
people. Houston, we have a problem.
You're going to need a bigger boat.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Film Actually, episode 99 for the 4th of September, 2010. I am David McVeigh, and I am joined in studio by Josh Philpott. How are you, Josh?
I'm good. I can never get that right. I always go the wrong direction
it's
first.
It's not a mirror, it's a camera.
Yes.
Boy, we've opened a third mic, and now everything's kind of echoey, weird. It's kind of weird. And Celine Roberts, how are you, Celine?
Very good, thank you,
David. Nice to have you back.
Nice to be back.
Okay.
It's been, what, a week?
Yeah, about that. you're fast becoming
regular.
Almost a regular on this week.
Well, I do live, literally, like, right there. 10 paces away, if that, maybe
Celine,
five.
Celine is our go-to girl. We haven't got to get some food. Celine, get on the show. What is this show? This is our film. Actually, this is the official movie podcast of the Geek Actually Network. We finished tech. Let's get into movies, something that we all love around here. And this week, along with our list of five, which Josh is frantically making on the fly, and a little bit of entertainment buzz, we take a look at the new British black satire, Four Lions. Now, before we get into our show, I just want to put out a really quick plug to the movie fan cast, but not so much the movie fan cast as Right This Instant, which is Brad's new show on moviefanhouse.com. And the reason why I'm doing a plug for this show is because it's completely self-centered. I'm on it. So if you shoot over to either the Movie Fan Cast or Right This Instant on iTunes, pull down the latest episode about Not Quite Hollywood, I guest with Brad, and we do an hour where we really get in deep about this Australian documentary. And it's a really good episode, if I do say so myself. So that plug is out of the way. Also, we should mention while we're on the whole Movie Fan House thing that their Walking Dead miniseries is coming soon, which we are all hoping to try and get onto at some point.
We are on.
Get all up in that.
This is going to be an awesome,
get up in its
awesome
guts.
Miniseries.
It's going to be amazing.
All right, so as is the new format of Film Actually, we're going to go straight into the film review. We'll come back to Entertainment Buzz in a minute. The film this week is now, where are we? Do I have a thing for it? Yes, I do. There we go. The film this week is Four Lions, directed by Christopher Morris and written by Jesse Armstrong, Sam Bain, and Christopher Morris, and has a really interesting little subcredit which says additional material by Simon Blackwell. It stars, now I'm going to massacre half these names. We're going to do our best here, okay? But I'm going to massacre these names in advance, and I apologize to all of these people. Riz Ahmed, Asher Ali, Nigel Lindsay, Kayvon Novak, Adil Akhtar, Benedict Cumberbatch,
oh,
Julia Davis, Craig Parkinson, Priya Kaladas, and Wasim Zakir. Now, the source of our synopsis this week actually comes from Sundance, because it debuted at Sundance last year. Mm-hmm. And they say, Four Lions tells the story of a group of British jihadists who push their abstract dreams of glory to the breaking point. As the wheels fly off and their competing ideologies clash, what emerges is an emotionally engaging and entirely plausible farce. In a storm of razor-sharp verbal jousting and large-scale set pieces, Four Lions is a comic tour de force. It shows that while terrorism is about ideology, it can also be about idiots. Which is a fair assessment of this film, I think. And we do.
I think if you combine both of those together, you'd get something that could define this entire movie, which is idiotology.
Idiotology.
I think that's kind
what
of
is the name of that?
Idiocracy. Yeah.
There you go. Very much so. Okay, we do have a trailer for it. Watch this, and then we'll come back and we'll talk about this film.
2, 3, action.
Hey, you don't believe in kafar bastards. I'm going to turn you, baby.
No.
What?
What's with the gun?
Proper replica, man.
It's too small, man.
Not too small, brother.
Big hands.
The way to stop the feds tracking you is very simple. You eat your SIM card.
Can I cook mine?
The total idiot's self.
I can't even get them to stir the tea without smashing a window.
My plan is, Dave, to put a bomb on a crow.
We're way beyond crows now, Fessy.
Answered the call, bro.
Training camp. Pakistan.
What?
What?
That's a drone.
You gotta take it out.
Must have been God's plan.
What, Soph? How could that be God's plan?
Well, it can't be God's plan to leave the lads with Barry, can it?
Why do we need a training camp anyway? We're primed. We don't need some tramp up a mountain telling us to set a fuse.
What we're going to do is got a blast in history. Echo through the ages.
Blow something up.
What are we going to blow up, Wedge?
Internet.
What?
Costume. We can disguise the gear in there, and it's perfect.
Playing for the fun run, lads?
What for charity?
You're going to die in that gear, lads.
It's all for a good cause, though.
Yeah.
It's not going to go off!
You're confused, bro.
I'm not confused, brother. I just took a picture of my face. It's defo not my confused face.
Can you do it?
It's in case they're taking pictures.
What?
Barry says you come out blurry.
Turn the books off your head.
I'm not showing an image.
Hey, brother, Fender!
I'm a wall special!
Okay, so that's Four Lions. Now, the trailer is actually, funnily enough, a lot funnier than the film. Because The film gets really dark in places. Now, it starts off just slapstick. I mean, a lot of that stuff is from the opening of this film, the beginning of this film. And it just kind of... It just darkens.
Like, is the best way I can put it, because the film actually, the tone gets more serious. The jokes never leave the film, but there's just a dark edge that gets more and more black the further you go through the film.
And only Brits could make a film that black and still keep it funny.
Exactly. It's if nothing else, this film immediately deserves full credit just for the writing, because that subject matter is such a fine line to walk.
There was actually an interview with the director of this film, and he actually talked about the fact that what inspired the whole thing was he took a look at terrorism, and he said, you know, yes, it's a terrible thing. Terrorism is a terrible thing, and what they do is terrible. Mm. But when you start delving into it, It's so stupid, and there's so much humor to be mined out of that. But to even just believe
that killing a whole lot of innocent people is somehow instantly going to fix your problems of ideology and you know, the way we live in the Western world, that's not going to work.
And actually,
all you're doing is just pissing people off.
And what's very interesting about this film is, of course, that because of the fact that it actually takes into its arena British citizens who may have been from Middle Eastern descent or not. That's not the issue. But the fact is that the lead character, Omar, who I found to be one of the most terrifying characters in the whole thing, is because he lives this very normal middle class
life.
And
he's really intelligent.
He's very intelligent. He works at a normal job. He's raising a lovely... His wife and him joke about the fact that he's going to blow himself up.
He's
teaching his kid. He's reading The Lion King, but in the idea that it's a jihad tale. Yeah. You know? And you sit there and go... You are terrifying.
Yeah.
What do you have to be angry about?
Exactly.
You know? And it's like, and then there's the other character who I found terrifying, which was Barry. Because here is a guy who is of English descent. He's not even Middle Eastern, who is obviously converted to being a Muslim just so he can jihad.
Just so that he can make a point.
Yeah.
It's just like, I'm just going to make an angry point, pretty much.
And all the way through it, how he keeps saying the thing he wants to blow up is a mosque.
Is a mosque.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So to make them angry so that they will fight more.
Yeah.
It's like, you really, your ideology is all over the place.
But it's funny because we delve into all this, you know, sort of serious subject matter. But what I find funny is every time you guys bring up one of these points, all I can think of is the attached jokes, which is the great thing about this film, because anytime it gets serious, they will finish it with a joke, right up to the end. I think the final joke is both the most heart-wrenching and also the funniest in the entire film, which is the fact that he, after all this conversation about how incredibly epic they were planning to make their whole effort,
just totally
what they actually end up doing, is actually something they discuss at the start and dismiss as a terrible idea and the dumbest thing they could have done.
And that's all he has left to do.
And the whole thing just falls flat.
We will do a short spoiler section because there's some stuff we want to talk about. I'm sure.
Oh, yeah, no. But just, like, some of the stuff is just so, like, I mean, they touch on every... This film is incredibly dry. Like, if you can't get subtle sense of humor, just avoid this movie at all costs because some of the jokes are just so quickly laid out and give you no time to actually process them before they're on to the next part of the thing. One of my favorite scenes of the entire movie is one of the dumbest scenes in the entire film, which is when he's trying to recruit the guy that he meets in the room. And there's that scene where mid-conversation... he's making no sense at all, and he does that thing where he starts the car and drives it like a meter into the wall, and he goes, that was real.
That was real.
And the dude's just looking at him like,
action.
Wow, that was intense, I guess. And it's just like, when he hits the wall, the bumper just kind of crumps just a little.
It's like he doesn't go into a full speed, he just kind of taps the wall. But Barry is insane. There's also that scene I love where the car conks out when they're carrying the explosives, and he starts blaming the Jews.
He's like, the Jews created sparks.
That scene was probably the scene directly after this, and again, I'm not trying to go into spoilers, but it's hard because, like, all of the comedic value in this is all about individual scenes. The scene directly after that where the dude grabs out of the boot the bag and chucks it to the guy, and you just get that incredible girly scream.
This actual hysterical scream comes from one of them. It's so good.
It's a film that you definitely shouldn't watch if you're in a bad mood, because it walks such a fine line between
comedy and dark.
As an example, I watched it with Katie, and we sat there, and at the end of it all, Katie kind of just looked at me and goes, that was incredibly depressing.
It was.
That's where it goes.
Yeah. Mm.
What you see in the trailer is this kind of riot, is almost Keystone.
That's all in the first half of the film.
And then it starts sliding. When you start to realize that they are actually
serious about doing this.
Even though they're idiots, and that's what makes them even more dangerous, is the fact that they are so stupid at what they're doing and everything about it. And you start going, this is just not going into a nice place. You know?
Exactly. Well, it's one of those things where the entire ending, my thoughts were never, you know, sort of how are they going to do this or what are they going to do? My entire internal mind workings was just, how in God's name are they going to walk this without basically changing the entire scene, like the entire feel of the film? And look, I mean, again, it's one of those fine lines where the last half an hour is actually incredibly tense.
Like, also, another thing that they've walked, the other line that they've walked really well is making sure that it's not offensive. Because this could be incredibly offensive.
Oh, dude, if that scene had have panned...
Agreed.
if the final scenes of the film had not panned out with people that were of the same descent, that film would have gone to... this film would be a controversy in itself. Yeah. But they manage very carefully.
They haven't made all Muslims look like extremists, because that's total bullshit.
And then there's also the
flip side, which is the brother
character. Yeah, let's say that we discussed the brother very quickly. We won't give away what happens to the brother, but, I mean, okay, I don't agree with the ideology of the brother, because he's into that whole radical thing where the girls should sit in a cupboard while the men talk and all this sort of stuff.
He's an example of an extremist.
But he is peaceful.
Yeah.
And he's an example of the Muslim belief that whole part where you shouldn't fight and violence isn't the way and all this sort of stuff. And then to flip that on its head the way that they do in this film, you sit there and go, oh, God.
Yeah.
It's like you just sit there and feel so sorry for this brother.
Yeah.
You know?
It's funny because the final scenes of the movie, both me and Salim were kind of looking at the screen, and there was that real sense in the room where we were kind of pondering. It really leaves you with a sense of thought, like, even though in the final scenes they drop a few killer jokes towards the sort of outing of the film during the credits and so on and so forth, when you turn it off, there's that whole feeling kind of like,
you're like, wow, that's really dark.
Yeah, like it definitely walks such a fine line. And look, I mean, so much credit goes out to them. The only thing I want to say, and both of us had the same feeling when we finished it, which was that the thing that came to mind is this would have been so much cooler, in my opinion, as a TV series. I would have loved to...
I think stretching it out to TV series may have outstayed its welcome.
But the way that the arc of the storyline goes, and the way that the complications and the plot, the way it flows, it feels really episodic. Like, you can almost imagine the episode where he goes to buy the bleach. Or the episode where they have to run the explosives along. Or the episode where the girl comes to the apartment and they have to kick her out. That kind of thing. Like, you can kind of see it as being episodic. And the way the story arc flows is it doesn't kind of reach a peak and then kind of die down. It just sort of hobbles along a bit.
It worked really well as a film, and I'm definitely not beating it up for that. But I think there's enough moments in the film where they kind of analyze what they are doing and where they're taking the series that you could put one of those in every episode to keep the feeling. And I'm not meaning a long series. I'm meaning like one of the CBS ones, like Dead Set or something like that, where you've got six or seven devoted episodes. Not saying they did a perfect job at what they did.
Considering that these guys all come from TV, they probably did cross their mind.
You can see that in the writing, because there are almost in some scenes, although a lot of the jokes are really subtle, there are almost in some scenes with other jokes on the flip side of that where they've left like a couple of seconds after they tell a joke. Like, you're almost waiting for there to be a laugh track or something. That's the way the kind of pacing is. Like, the jokes are either really, really understated and they just kind of brush straight over them, or which is beautiful, or there's these kinds of pauses after a joke, like they wait for you to laugh and then go back to it. You know, it does feel very written for TV.
To me at least, it felt
very, not that that it didn't necessarily make the dialogue fantastic, it just felt a lot like it could have been a mini-series, like a four-part episodes or something.
You can really tell, like what you were saying before, it is like everyone sort of in the British industry has a real sort of grounding in TV, and you can really feel that because it's in the way that it's shot. It's a very sort of empty film. There's no music where there doesn't need to be, you know.
Well, there's very little music in the film, period.
Exactly, and whenever it is, it's used to, you know, sort of really sort of push home a point or what they're doing or sort of fill, you know,
For atmosphere.
Exactly, and I really do like that, but it is so TV, and it really is. It's just like even shots like the wonderful shot that you see in the trailer there of one of the members going over the fence with two bags of explosives and killing a sheep.
And himself.
That scene there is just such a TV moment, and it's such a British TV moment, but it is just I was so in tears dumb. In
the
that
other, the other moment because, and it's the same character where he's with the crow and he's talking to the crow like it's a person. Now you're gonna go over there, there.
I just love the way, because like as he's walking away from the fence, you're just waiting for it. And can I say, awesome explosives. Because that crow definitely explodes 100%. You know, it's
Look, I actually really, really enjoyed this film. I wasn't sure what to expect. And there are definite flavors of In the Loop in there. It's got that kind of same sensibility.
Same sort of dialogue and same shot work.
Very dry. It's a very British dry satire. And it's the one thing the British do really well. But they also do, it's something Celine touched on at the beginning, they also do something that I don't think anybody else does as well as the British, which is they can start as comedy and they can move into drama or move into dark places. We've seen it in Shallow Grave. We've seen it in so many films where they start off and you think it's one film and they move into a completely different place. And the British seem to be able to do this seamlessly.
Yeah. I think it's because it's that kind of culture thing. There is always kind of the laugh track over the top of their life. It's just how they're brought up. It's like everything that is, you know, sort of old British thing always has that kind of dry sense of humor, even if the situation is very serious. That's the way they deal with difficult subjects.
There's a shade of another film. I actually saw a film, we reviewed it on this show about a year and a half ago, called Gomorrah, which is an Italian film all about the Italian mobs and all this stuff. And it's dark cinema verte stuff. But there's two characters in it who are these two young teenagers who want to be Scarface.
Yeah.
Basically, they want to be Scarface. They all the way through it, they're quoting Tony Montana, and they get at one point they get machine guns, and they're just sitting in there. They're standing at a river's edge in their underwear, shooting Uzis into the water, quoting Scarface and all this sort of stuff. And it's terrifying. You look at this indoctrination to these kids, and then you watch this film, and the Raj character, his friend, is that character again.
Oh, dude, absolutely.
You know, he's a moron. He has not a brain cell in his head, and everything he does is because of what Omar tells him to do.
That scene towards the end is just so poignant, where he phones him up, and he basically says, I don't know what to do. Tell me what to do. Yeah. And there's that real realization that the entire time his friend has just been kind of pushing him into this. And, I mean, like, again, all, you know, very carefully coated yeah. with humor, but God, it's such dark subject
matter. I want to go into spoilers fairly soon because there's actually something else that's a really poignant moment in this film. And it's near the end, and it is kind of a critical moment in the film. So we'll talk about that in spoilers. Because
it's going to spoilers.
Let's go into spoilers now.
We don't need to talk anymore. Come on.
Let's round this up. We'll finish off the main review, and we'll basically say, as we always do, Celine, would you recommend it to your friends?
I would definitely recommend it to my friends.
Yep.
I'd obviously, you know, it's people who like that kind of British dry humour, but I know like a fair few people who would really, really enjoy that film. Yep. Because they enjoy British TV or British film.
Absolutely. Yeah. Josh?
I will be owning that on DVD when it comes out. So, yes. Mm. No, I advise anyone that can deal with humor and, like, anyone that can see a dark sense of humor and understand...
And let me just say, there are laugh out loud moments.
Exactly. Oh, yeah. But to understand that you can make that jump and that you can see... In other words, people that can laugh at, you know, sort of... something funny in a train wreck or something like that. You have to be able to see the humor in what they're trying to say. And it's like, it's a definite message, but expect to laugh as well. So if you don't have that sensibility, don't go near it because this film will destroy your mind.
And we should also stress to be aware that it does go into dark places and it can be a very depressing film.
Exactly.
Depending on which way you're looking at it.
But no, everyone should watch this film.
It's a very poignant film.
Exactly.
Very poignant. Good word. Mm. And I'm going to say that, yes, I recommend this highly. I actually love this film and it left me speechless at the end. I actually had to sit for a good 5 minutes not talking and just thinking about the, in particular, the last 10 minutes of this film.
Oh, we didn't even talk about it last night because it's just you need to give yourself distance from it to really kind of soak it in.
You do.
So,
all right. So what we're going to do now is we're going to go into a spoiler area and we're going to time this because it is in the middle of the show. So if you are listening to the podcast, I'm going to look at the clock right now. I'm going to say we're going to give ourselves. In fact, I'm going to bring up the clock on screen. So even Josh.
Oh, well, there we go. We can have like time passing music.
According to the clock on screen, it is 2:20 p.m. So at 2:30 p.m. So 10 minutes. We will finish. Well, this way it gives us room, and you can always back up if you have to, all right? So, believe me, every time we've gone into a spoiler zone, we've gone past the 10 minutes.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so we'll give ourselves 10 minutes. So if you're on a podcast, when we say go, fast forward 10 minutes, okay?
Yeah.
All right, and spoiler zone now. All right, I want to talk about the exchange between Omar and I think it's Barry when at the end, because Omar keeps saying it has to be your choice, right? And the whole concept of this martyrdom is it has to be your choice to get into heaven. And then Barry blows up the other guy because he tries to run away. And he says, you took away his choice.
Yeah.
And Barry says to Omar, but you took away Raj's choice by convincing him that... He
didn't want to because Raj
said, my heart tells me I shouldn't do this. And he says, but, you know, you've got to swap them around. You've gotten confused and all this sort of stuff. And he convinces him to go through with it anyway. And for Barry to sit there and say, but you also took away his choice. And the look on Omar's face at that point, and when all the shit falls apart and they're being chased by the cops and the SWAT teams are out there, and that last minute, you can finally see it sink into Omar where he goes, fuck it, what have I done?
They've just fucked everything up.
Yeah.
Everything goes, nothing goes to plan. They're planning to blow up this fun run, and it just doesn't work. Like, the bombs go off at the completely wrong times. They end up in stupid situations with no hostages. It's like...
I think the more important point is at that stage, like, apart from the blowing up people situation, it's the point in the film that they realize they don't know why they're doing it.
Mm.
And that's really where it becomes both scary and incredibly, like you were saying, poignant. Because it's that whole moment in his mind where he realizes as well that they have no idea why they're doing this anymore. They have lost exactly what they started out at the start of the film to try and accomplish.
I didn't think they really knew what they were doing.
I know, but they had an idea in their head. They knew a concept of kind of what they wanted. What they wanted to try and accomplish. They wanted to get close to these people. They wanted to get into kind of that that kind of... you know, sort of terrorist camp. They wanted to learn what this was all about. They wanted to, you know, sort of thing. So, I mean, aside from the fact that it may not be incredibly right of them, it's just interesting the fact that, like, at that point, I think even he is kind of at the point where he's just like, forget this. Let's just stop this now.
Mm.
And, it's kind of a bit late when they realize that. So, yeah.
Yeah, and there's also, I mean, I love the fact that when he finally, he gets in contact with Raj. Raj, at this point, has holed himself up in the kebab shop.
Mm. And he's sitting there. With one hostage.
With one hostage because he's been told to let the rest go. And he's sitting there and he goes, no, you're confused. And there's that whole thing with, I'm looking at my confused face. And he's saying, no, I'm not confused. I know what I have to do. And he's saying, no, you're confused. At this point, he's trying to convince Raj to let it go.
Yeah.
It's over. Forget it. It's not going to work. He says, I'm going to turn myself in. You know? And then, of course, the police burst in and shoot the wrong
person. Wrong guy. And then he blows them up anyway.
You know, and it's like, you sit there and go, it's just all a mess at the end. And the part that Josh was alluding to before, at the very beginning of the film, when they talk about the fact, what are we going to blow up? And he says, let's blow up a boots.
No, it's a particular one. It's that particular chemist because they sell condoms that make you want to have sex with white girls.
With white flags.
And at the end, of course, when he's got nowhere else to go, he runs into that chemist and sets himself off.
Exactly.
This is where Katie came in, because Katie actually said what she found so depressing was the fact that he didn't have to do that. He could have given himself up.
Yeah.
He could have, at that point, with that crisis of conscience, he could have given himself up. But he chose to go off.
No, but I think, look, he could have chosen to give up and go back, but I think there was that part of him that just wanted it all to be worth something. And it's that whole concept that it was the only thing he could attach to himself that was something that they had actually, as the group, gone out to achieve. So it was just like, it's that kind of moment where he's like, I'll at least finish this off doing something that we can
with
set
a bang
but look, I mean, poignant stuff aside, I mean, a couple of scenes I want to mention that I thought were amazing were, like I was saying, the bag throwing with the bags full of explosive things, and he throws the bag to that
and
guy.
And the punchline to that scene, though, with the jogger, when he's talking about
the low stretches when they're all running with the bags out the side and trying not...
You see him running off with this low little gate to himself.
Oh, yeah. No, that was really cool. I really like the explosion scene where he actually jumps over the scene fence just because it's so well handled. Not only is the explosion awesome, then the faces are
afterwards. Camera sits there for like a good 30 to 60 seconds, and the guy in the background is smiling the whole time.
The
punchline to that, though, is that is so incredibly dark in itself, but then there's the thing where he asks him where the thing is, and he says it's in the bag. I couldn't separate it out.
Yeah.
And you're just sitting there going, oh god, that's so dark.
And he has, if you look closely, his hands are covered in blood.
Yeah, and then later on when the head falls out of the tree, and he goes, I told you that wasn't a head. He goes, it had a joint in it.
It's just so dark.
It's quite possibly the darkest film I think I've ever seen.
Like, all right, now let's talk a little bit about a couple of the little end credit stingers, which I thought were really classic. Now, in the trailer, you see him fire that bazooka and
backwards
kick himself off his feet with that bazooka, which, even though it's in the trailer, still made me laugh out loud when I saw the film, even though I knew it was coming.
Yeah.
But it's in the end credits. There's a couple of little news reports.
Exactly.
And the one news report that I really liked was the one where the guy is saying, so let me get this straight. The police shot the right man, but then the wrong man blew up the place.
The one that I loved is the one where you got the police report, which says that some training, and it's done with that whole kind of American kind of like
quirky, let's see how they fucked up this time.
Exactly, sort of. It's that kind of American home videos or something, kind of a sensibility to it. It's like fired a rocket launcher backwards and accidentally blew up a training camp with Osama bin Laden in it, and I just thought that was just genius.
The scene Dave is talking about is the scene where they're told to shoot somebody in a bear costume, and the police accidentally shoot someone in a Wookiee costume. So they're taken out.
At the kebab shop. Remember? Because when they break into the kebab shop.
I didn't see that one coming. That's the only joke that really wasn't telegraphed for me, because it's that moment that I just wasn't thinking, because my mind was very serious at the time, where he slides across the bomb to the other guy and just to try and sort of get him in the moment. And he's like, you hold this. That way you'll die first and you get to go to heaven first. And then when they burst in, they shoot him because he's holding the bomb. And I did not see that one coming.
That's the one you're talking about.
But there's also another scene where the snipers accidentally snipe someone in a Wookiee costume instead of the dude in a bear costume.
They shoot the guy in the bear costume.
And then there's this great scene where they sit there arguing.
And then just sitting there arguing about the fact that they've just annihilated the wrong guy.
What the fuck's a Wookiee?
And they're like, the Wookiee is a bear. It's the same thing.
Very good.
I think we're pretty much finished on spoilers. This is a highly recommended film. It is currently playing at Dendy Cinemas. Mm-hmm. Go see it. It is well worth the price of admission. It is a funny film, but
the walk
also
or drive home. The walk or drive home will be filled with just you thinking about what you've just seen. But that is in itself just totally worth it.
Yeah, just be prepared for what you're going into. It is not. It is not entirely a laugh fest.
Yeah.
By the end, it does get into some serious territory. Mm. Okay. I love it when we have a good film. I love it when we have a good film that is unexpected.
Mm.
It's like this is little tiny little film. Right. Next week, our feature film review, of course, will be The Sorcerer's Apprentice. Talk about sublime to the ridiculous. Right. So, but yeah, we have these little films coming out when there is no major film to look at the moment. Mm. And you sit there and go, wow, I'm so glad this was here because this was better than probably most of the major films that are coming out.
No.
Okay. Let's talk a little bit about some of the stuff that we have found out this week. One of the things that we found out this week, Josh, which I think you'll be quite thrilled at, is that we're finally going to see a director's cut of Brazil.
Hmm. And can you read the question out for me?
Read the question out?
Yeah, the title of the thing.
The question that I wrote?
Yes,
I said,
Brazil,
the director's cut, will we find
it? Yes. I don't even know what's in it. I don't know what they're going to do to it. I don't know how they're going to change it. I don't care. I'm watching it.
Now, apparently, it's not actually a new cut. Apparently, this is the European cut of this film, which was the original European cut that was released. It's 146 minutes as opposed to our 122 minutes long.
Yeah.
And it's basically disappeared. So now it is being screened at a film festival. I think it's in Venice or something like that. They're showing it as the opening film, and they're saying it's a really unorthodox move because it's the first time that they haven't shown a new movie as the opening film.
Yeah.
But Terry Gilliam is basically showing this. And what I'm hoping is that now that it's back out in the limelight, will they release it on DVD? Will we finally get to see this film?
And you have to.
I'll make you a bet this is the Criterion Collection version, which they get in the States, which we don't get here.
I can order it.
I have my ways.
Want the European cut on Blu-ray in my collection right now. That's what I want.
Damn right. Let's appeal it.
Let's appeal it.
All right.
Second piece of news we learned this week is that the Preacher film / miniseries is not dead yet.
Damn.
Now.
Because you're about to find out.
A couple of years ago.
Oh, is this bad news?
Mm-hmm. No, we don't. Well, no, because we don't know. All we know at this point is a couple of years ago, Sam Mendes was signed to helm this project.
Mm-hmm.
And he since has pulled out. And the thing has sat in limbo ever since.
Yeah. They even did the concept makeup for Arseface.
I know.
That's how they were.
They were
going to
do it as an HBO or Showtime
series. Yeah, and they
series.
Were
going to
have the Saint of Killers was going to be, they were hoping, Samuel L. Jackson, actually.
No.
For a brief point of time. They
Saint
were
Killers.
Very, very
Saint
brief.
Of Killers, I would have put
Sam Elliott.
Sam Elliott.
Yeah. Yeah, Sam Elliott was the first one I ever heard of that they were thinking of casting, which I thought was the best choice ever. Mm. When that man is in dark territory, he is just scary.
For those who have not read Preacher, now I am actually...
Dan, you're all idiots.
I am reading Preacher at the moment. These two have both read Preacher. Mm. Would one of you please give us a brief synopsis of Preacher?
A brief synopsis of
Jesus,
Preacher.
Jesus, how do you do that?
Yeah. A dude who kind of...
No, I got this one.
Yeah.
I got this one.
Yeah,
Preacher is the story of a guy called Jesse Custer. Who basically, due to things outside, outside of his control, there is an argument in heaven, and God goes for a walk, and basically all hell breaks loose up there. So this entity that God has had under control all this time basically
breaks free
and takes residence in a preacher who is very far from
very far
gone from pure, and basically he gathers this ability to use the word of God, and basically it's his story about going to find God and basically make him responsible for his actions.
And the best part of the whole series is when God says, I created man just to be loved.
Yeah.
Now, would you like to hear the official synopsis?
Yeah, okay.
Sure.
This is the official plot synopsis from the graphic novel, okay? Mm. And I love the way this is worded. Here's a book guaranteed to offend a bunch of people. Not only because of its profuse profanity and graphic violence, but because it's an epitome of iconoclasm iconoclasm, God, these words, like a brutal accident you can't watch, but you can't turn away. The story follows an ex-preacher man, Jesse, who has become disgusted with God's abandoning of his responsibilities. So Jesse starts off into the wilds of Texas with his hitman girlfriend and new best friend, a vampire, to find God so that he can give him peace of his mind. Despite its superficial perversity, this book contains what may be the most moral character in mainstream comics. A cult hit in the making, fans of Quentin Tarantino take note.
Mm.
So that's the official synopsis. Yeah.
Too many big words. Mine's better.
Yeah, I think there's 75 issues. I'm about issue 30 at the moment. Mm. Now, what they're saying about the current status of this project is that screenwriter John August has now expressed interest in directing the film himself.
Mm.
But we don't know if that's going to happen. We've also heard that Joe Carnahan, who is the director of The A-Team, is interested in directing the project.
You see why I'm now scared?
Yeah.
Now, he actually said, his quote is, "I'm kind of desperate to do another comic book adaptation, and the other thing I'm really keen on or interested in is Preacher, because I'm a big Garth Ennis fan, and I love that series."
Oh, I've read this,
And that's out there, and that might be something. Yeah. I really love that. You got to do The All-Father and all that crazy shit, and I haven't seen it.
Oh, good, all that crazy shit.
And I don't know what
you get time in the limelight to explain to fans why you should do this comic,
and
you say
all that shit.
All that crazy shit, but yeah, we'll see.
Gone.
Who knows?
No.
Now,
I'm sorry. Not letting
other
touch
people
it.
Who have been attached to this in the past were Mark Steven Johnson, Ghost Rider / Daredevil, and Robert Rodriguez. Now, Robert Rodriguez.
I was very excited when I heard Rodriguez because Rodriguez could do it. Rodriguez
I
think
totally
he could do it over
it.
The top without
yep,
it
absolutely.
Being stupid.
I'm sorry. He could do totally over the top. He could not get the sensibility and the important points. And the subtleties of the plot.
You don't think?
No.
Delta Knight in the chat room says this entire thing sounds like a joke. Sounds like a preacher, a hitman, and a vampire walk into a bar.
Which they do very many, many
actually,
times.
Actually, many times walk into it.
Look, I'm sorry, dude. I agree with you with the fact that, like, I think Rodriguez could handle the insanity of everything that happens. He could not handle the storyline. Because
sensitivity.
Exactly. There is not a moment of sensitivity in that man. He is not capable of doing a movie with intelligent plot points in it.
Well, maybe.
Give me one.
Yeah, no, maybe,
just give me one example. Give me one example, please.
No, I'm saying maybe you could have a point there. I'll have to think about that.
Damn.
I will have a counter for you later.
Sorry?
Who would you get to direct?
Wait, let's bring up your mic. In the studio, we also have Josh Spencer with us. How are you, Josh?
Spenny too.
I'm well.
Spenny, what are you saying?
I just asked Josh who would he pick to direct.
Jesus.
Yeah, Josh.
Yeah,
no,
Josh.
No, hey, you're going to put me on the spot. I'll use particular ones. And Dave, I need your help because it has slipped my mind. Who did Kick-Ass?
Oh, Matthew Vaughn.
Matthew Vaughn. I'm sorry. Look, because the man can handle dark subject matter. He can handle
humor.
That moment in Kick-Ass. The moment in Kick-Ass where the kid gets stabbed, right? There are a lot of those kind of instant shifts in Preacher where it goes from incredibly ludicrous and funny to something
really
very
serious.
Grounded and serious, and I think he could handle that. Plus, he has a really good mind for moving what is a very odd sensibility onto screen and allow it to kind of play out well. So I would say him or someone else of English descent, because as we were discussing
that
before, English...
Right.
Well, this
English
is one of the reasons
people.
Why Sam Mendes was an interesting choice.
Yeah.
And I actually really am sorry that Sam Mendes pulled out, because his handling of The Road to Perdition was staggering, which is also a graphic novel that had been converted, and a really, really good film.
Exactly.
And
Sam Mendes I was okay with. I wasn't worried when I heard that. I was like, all right, we've got this project on the way. Let's see how this
now,
plays out.
Now, the irony, of course, is that Sam Mendes dropped out of Preacher because he went to pursue directing the new James Bond movie. Now, we've seen how well that's turned out. So, anyway. So, at this point in time...
I don't know what you're talking about.
At this point in time, producer Neil Moretz is still pursuing Preacher. He is still trying to make it happen, but it is a mess. It is a mess. They don't have any clear goal at this point.
And this is why I was saying that I'm worried.
I'd be content if it never happened. I enjoy the comics to such an extent. I've reread them several times. I could almost quote them back to front. Like, I enjoy them thoroughly, and every time I reread them, I enjoy them thoroughly.
And
I don't think there needs to be a film. I'm happy without there being a film. They released a film or a miniseries, and it was shit, and it was good. I'd be like, cool, yeah, whatever. I take it with a grain of salt. I don't want to have this much writing on it because
enough.
I love it that much.
Yeah, but the whole problem that I have is if it does come out and fail, and this is why I'm with you, I'd rather see this never happen is because I don't want anyone to associate it with that thing. So I don't want to be mid-conversation with somebody that isn't a fan. And basically have them go, and have them go, oh, you mean that really crappy film? Yeah. I'll be like, no, I mean the fantastic written series.
Yeah.
And there'll be people who will be turned off the comic because of the status of it.
I did hear also at one point very, very early on, about 2 years ago, when they just kind of announced that they might be doing an HBO series of Preacher, that Garth Ennis actually was going to write the script for it.
Yeah, but that sounds like that's out
that was that was well, a, look, that mean, sounded more like a rumor than anything else.
Garth Ennis is a hit and miss anyway, and I just really don't want him. Like, I mean, the whole thing is that I want somebody, like, if we're going to do a film on it, we should be doing a film's take on it. So don't get him to write it, because he'll just write it as a comic.
Just as a side note as well, this is completely off topic for a second, but I've got Katie reading Why the Last Man at the moment.
Yeah.
And she seems to be enjoying it. And I told her that we had a conversation about who we would cast as York. And she, without even hesitation, said the 500 Days of Summer guy, Joseph Gordon-Levitt. Without even hesitation. And it's like, I thought that was a really interesting choice, because we never actually mentioned him. And I thought, that's actually not a bad choice.
Yeah,
so,
no, I'm actually down with it. I see Josh in the corner there going,
He's nodding away there as well. Exactly. So you concur with this one.
I concur.
You concur.
Yeah. Or I'm happy with either.
Would have been Shia LaBeouf.
Yeah, exactly.
Josh mentioned Shia LaBeouf. Yeah.
Great minds.
So I thought that was very interesting. But anyway, so we'll see what happens with Preacher. There's no way of knowing it. Oh, wait a second. Yep.
One thing about Preacher, when you were talking about it as a miniseries, I thought the guys that did Deadwood might, because they've got the Western thing.
Yeah.
And also they can do dark, I would like, we know that.
And
they
dialogue.
Can do fucked up. They can do good dialogue.
I would like the director to stay.
Mendes?
No. Was it Mendes that did... Matthew
Vaughn.
Matthew Vaughn. Sorry, my mind is gone today. I want that, and I want the team behind the visuals of Deadwood.
You know what's really interesting is that there are directors who I would say are perfect for Preacher in their prime, and they've all passed their prime now. And you sit there and you go, it's so frustrating because the director who directed the pilot episode of Deadwood, who got the whole thing started, was Walter Hill.
Yeah.
And if you would actually approach Walter Hill in 1979, 1980, 1981 to direct Preacher, he would have been the ultimate director to direct this film. But he's past his prime. Mm. If you had asked John Carpenter in 1982 to direct Preacher, you would have gone, there's the director for you, you know? Yeah. And you sit there and you look at these classic directors and you think, oh, God, I wish you weren't past your prime now. Because there's no way I would let John Carpenter touch Preacher now.
No,
you know?
No.
He just doesn't have it anymore, you know?
Yeah.
And what worries me, of course, is when you start to hear rumors circulating around and people start getting excited about stuff and you start going, no, these are really bad choices. You would never give somebody like Steven Spielberg Preacher. Mm. He doesn't have the darkness to him.
I think you're right. I think it needs to be a British director because Ennis is Irish. So he has that really bleak.
Actually, do you know who I would like to have? I'd like to have a crack at Preacher is David Yates. David Yates is currently directing the last three Harry Potter films. But he also directed State of Play, the original British miniseries of State of Play. Not the movie, but the original miniseries. He's got the right sensibility behind him. And he's got that really kind of slightly darker edge
to him. That's the thing. I don't think he'd use an American. I think he'd use a Brit because they have a sensitivity. And also, and it could be incredibly humorous and incredibly dark, which is what it is.
That's right. And you need to have that I'm not afraid to be controversial bone, which the Americans are all too PC.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're all too PC, unfortunately. Mm. All right, we have a trailer. Now, this trailer is Buried. This is the new Ryan Reynolds film that Josh and I are both really keen on. Now, it's interesting because this is the international trailer. Now, we played a trailer on the show a few weeks ago, which was no visuals. It was just
the
dialogue and all these graphics on screen. Yeah. This is the international version, basically, of that trailer, which actually shows the images. So it's the same trailer, but now with image.
Guys, we have everyone in the thing saying we're suffering from massive lag.
I apologize. Not a lot I can do about the lag while we're in mid-show, but we will have a look at that. We'll test the lag. Let's see what the lag actually is. So
my
we're going
to.
Staggering. There's nothing I can do about that, unfortunately. That'll be.
Sorry, guys.
Right now, it's still preacher talk. Well, yeah, gosh. We will look into this. let me just run this trailer, and while we're running this trailer, I will see what I can do. All right, so here is the trailer for the international trailer for Buried.
Buried in a coffin in the ground.
You have to help me. You have to help me. I can't breathe.
How did you end up in the coffin, sir?
My convoy was ambushed.
I got hit in the head. I blacked out, and that's the last thing I remember.
I'm being held for ransom. I need $5 million, but I'll be left to die here.
Okay, Mr. Conroy.
Wait. I need to know my name. What's going on right now?
Where is money?
I need more time.
I'm begging you.
Let me out of here. I promise you, I will get you the money.
No.
To sell that film.
Look, I think it is art house plus, and I think it's going to be. It is. You're right. It's going to be a very hard sell to make this work. But I am so intrigued,
Dude. It's like everything that I enjoy about film, and the one thing that I have to say immediately is it's like phone booth, but I don't have to look at Colin Farrell.
Now, to our chat room, this lag that you're experiencing, it may snap out of it. There is no other bandwidth going out of the house, so it is actually at server end, not at our end. So it's AINet. There's not a lot we can do about it. Hopefully it will catch back up. That's what tends to happen, is it snaps back into shape. So just bear with it. Good. Okay. Now, what else have we got on the agenda for today? Mark Miller? Is he just full of crap, or is he just deluded, or what's his story? Mark Millar came out basically saying, Kick-Ass 2, it's made it's made $150 million on DVD, and the sequel's already been greenlit. It's all happening. Sequel's already on the way. And all I can say is, well, you know, actually, Matthew Vaughn and his screenwriter are both working on X-Men right now.
Yeah.
So to be greenlit by a studio would actually require there to be a script.
Yeah.
And I don't think there is a script for Kick-Ass 2 yet, actually even written at this point. So I think he's kind of jumping the gun just a little bit up.
Do we actually know, Josh? That? Because
it may not. They may not be keeping the same director.
Yeah.
I don't think Matthew Vaughn's about to let this go. He independently produced this.
That's true. Yeah. But at the same time, I do want to say that I don't know whether that is true, because I know that there was a conversation with some stars saying he was starting Kick-Ass 2.
Yeah, but then he got signed for X-Men, so he's... And Matthew
Vaughn can't do two things at once.
Matthew Vaughn has said many times in the past that he likes to work on one thing at a time. So, and the fact that he has his regular screenwriter, who her name has gone out of my head right now.
She's got pink hair. It's cool.
She's got pink hair and huge boobs. and she used to be an underwear model.
The one that's on the poster in the background?
That's Matthew Vaughn's wife.
That's his wife.
That's his wife on the billboard in Kick-Ass. What's her name? I can't believe it. Jane Goldman, who is his writer, are all working on X-Men at the moment. So I have a feeling that I think Mark Millar might be jumping the gun just a little bit. That's the issue I've got. So basically what he's saying is he says the estimate for Kick-Ass is it'll do 100 to 150 million on DVD based on American sales. So it'll end up making $250 million on $28 million investment. So it should be okay. So the sequel's greenlit. We can go ahead and do the follow-up now. And he says, a lot. The first made so much compared to what it cost, it would be crazy not to. So what he's saying there is, we are greenlit, but we might not be greenlit, and it would be crazy not to go ahead with a sequel. So even within his own statement, he's not really confirming or denying anything.
So you're asking in your title, is he full of shit or just deluded? Or is he just really smart and just trying to sell himself? He's like, I'm saying this, but I'm not actually saying it. And then I'm going to say this, but actually I'm backing myself up. So basically, if anyone ever calls him on it, he'll be like, yeah, I did say that. But then straight after it, I said I didn't know.
Now, mind you, no screenplay, no director, no production actually happening yet. Yet he's already saying it could be Brad Pitt and Johnny Depp in the new one.
I thought that was for Nemesis.
Is this a name dropping for Nemesis, is he? No, Now, Kick-Ass 2, which is based on literal interpretation of the most recent comment, is ready to go forward, and he's name-dropping Brad Pitt and Johnny Depp in relation to... Oh, no, that's his Nemesis. Yes. You're right.
That's,
right, it's Nemesis.
That's for Nemesis. No, that was a separate
name-dropping, thing. He's name-dropping Nemesis all over the place, and that's directed by Tony Scott.
Exactly.
So that is actually going ahead. Now, Slash Film... actually goes on to say that considering that Kick-Ass is still slightly under $100 million in its box office, it hasn't been a sensational film in terms of take. Mm. So it'll be very interesting to see what happens. Now, mind you, Mark Millar hasn't even started producing the sequel yet as a comic book. We've got some early sketches coming out and some early panels, but we haven't even seen a sequel comic book. I would say before he starts really going ahead and greenlighting the next film, maybe he should write the next book. Mm. I think that would be a starting point, yeah. Don't you? Anyway, I think success and fame is starting to get to him. Now, I also have this picture, and I've lost the article. Where is it? Oh, no, here it is. This is just for laughs, guys. This was from The Onion, and we all know that The Onion is not to be taken seriously. All right, The Onion makes up its stories. There are some people out there who read Chuck The Onion Horner. And actually think it's real. All right, they believe it. There are actually people. The newspaper has now since died, but there was a newspaper called World Weekly News, if you remember that, and people actually used to think it was for real. Okay, so let's be very clear. This is parody. All right, but this photo surfaced on The Onion, which I loved. And the headline was, Martin Scorsese attends free iMovie demonstration at the Apple Store. And basically says, quote, Martin Scorsese, importing, editing, post-production, they got it all on the computer, said Scorsese, who arrived 20 minutes early for the in-store workshop. I like it. You can make your pictures right on there. It's tremendous. So I would suggest you shoot over to The Onion and read the whole article. It is actually very funny. And I just loved it. I was hoping they would release a video of this because they do their video news as well. I think that would have been hysterical. But they didn't do a video of it. It is just a written, but it is very fun. And he goes on, there's a whole section where he talks about, you know, how he never realized that this sort of magic was out there and all this sort of stuff. It's very cute. All right. So now... before we go into our list of fives, we do actually have some feedback, and we will read this very quickly. This is from our good friend Matt, or Snake Oz, who comes into our chat room a lot. Is Snake Oz in our chat room today? No, not today. All right, well, Snake, this goes out to you. You sent this in. We're going to paraphrase this email down a little bit because it's a very long email. But basically, he just said that he went to see Piranha 3D this week in answer to our Piranha discussion that we had. And he said he's not entirely sure it was worth his $24, but it was a lot of fun. He says, that underwater scene. That underwater scene, and we all know what underwater
scene. I know this is directed at me.
Yes, he says, yes, Josh, it was very beautiful, but how did you not notice everything that was on display?
I was taking it all in, I just wasn't looking. I was looking at the scope as opposed to the individual points on the screen.
I see. Okay, he also goes on to say that...
Josh is grinning at it.
I haven't seen it yet, so... I'm interested to see the scene.
Oh, yes.
It is a magnificent scene.
There's vagina in that scene.
Is there? Wow.
Oh, yes.
As you constantly tell us.
She went there. Wow. All right,
I left and I was like, did you guys see the vagina? And you were like, no. I'm like, were you seriously just looking at her tits? Weren't at all trying to get some vag in there.
I saw that. I just wasn't going to throw it out there quite so blatantly.
Josh was just looking at like the rays of light.
Yeah,
exactly. Coming down and touching, you know, softly caressing the body. And I was like, wow.
Now, I got to say that when we actually did Piranha 3D last week and we did halfway through our top five, we actually stopped at one point and we said, my God, I wish Celine was here.
Unfortunately, I could not be here. Instead of talking about breasts, I was at high tea being a lady.
Well, there you go. Because our top five list suddenly came across as sounding incredibly sleazy. And if you had been here, it would have actually offered some legitimacy to it.
It would have been a little less sleazy with a chick here going, yeah, no, there actually was a lot of tit in that film.
There you go.
Like a ridiculous, like softcore pornography amounts of tit.
Yeah, it's,
so Celine is here to help us out now. So, but yes, that underwater scene was quite phenomenal.
Yes, and no. Oh, got it.
Thank you. Now, he goes on to say, one thing with your review, while it isn't your fault, thank you very much, but where you got into your info from Richard Dreyfuss, basically IMDb, and this is a good argument, by the way, step away from the email for a minute, this is a good argument for staying through the credits at the end of a movie, because he actually says that Richard Dreyfuss played Matt Boyd not Matt Hooper, because we all made a joke that it was lovely that they had kept his name and it was like the same character from Jaws. He says, IMDb had it listed as Hooper, but the movie credits had it as Boyd. Oh. And IMDb, I have actually now checked, IMDb is now fixed. They have updated it.
Well, there we go.
So my thought about this, going away from his email for a second, was, Josh and I were talking about this before the show, was that I have a feeling they plan to call him Matt Hooper. Information was submitted to IMDb. During the production of the film, Universal Studios probably got in touch with them and said,
No.
You know? And so they had to change it at the last minute, and now they've updated. But anyway, so that's a bit of a shame, because that's one of the best jokes in the film, I reckon. Okay, so paraphrase, blah, blah, blah. He says, now, while I've done a lot of diving, too, I agree with Josh that the diving and underwater stuff was very accurate right up until the end. Now, this is actually, Josh and I were talking about this. This is actually not a criticism of Josh.
Exactly.
It's not about the diving.
Exactly. Okay? I'm going to say that my original statement is correct because none of the diving was wrong, but yes, I totally agree with him
but
on
he
this
does
point.
Say, he does go on to say it was accurate right up until the end where the oldest son and girl should have died.
Yes.
And he goes, and here's why. Spoiler alert for Piranha 3D.
As if we care.
As
really.
If we care. All right.
As if you're going to see that film for a storyline.
Please don't spend $20 on this movie.
When the four of them are getting rescued and using the rope to get to the ski boat, where did the rocks go so the ski boat could have gone right
to the cruiser?
I
love that one scene where you actually see the rope taut, and it taut's between like four different rocks. And you're
all
like,
the jagged rocks together.
Yeah.
And then,
and also that they rip them out at an astounding speed. Apparently there's no rocks in there.
He also says, I'm 90% sure that when the son climbed into the water with the rope, he went under the railing, which would have meant that they would have been pulled back through the railing and killed either by the explosion or being shredded by the railing as the ski boat pulled them away.
I love the way he says that. It's so accurate and clinical.
If he didn't go under the railing, why weren't they killed by the rocks that grounded the boat?
Yeah.
Luckily, the rocks had vanished by then, so they weren't in the way.
I mean, there's a shot of them getting pulled through, like, just clear space of empty water with
Dave,
no rocks.
All I have to say to you is clipping error.
Clipping error. Absolutely clipping error. he said, anyway, was a good movie, enjoyed it lots, was just writing in about the Richard Dreyfuss, but it ended up as a rant on why the main character should have died, should be dead, laugh out loud. I guess it's fun to nitpick at the odd movie. Anyway, we'll hopefully be back in the chat room next week, as family commitments will not allow me this week. That's why he's not there. Okay, thank you very much, Matt.
Thank you, Matt.
Very nice. And yes, we actually did discuss the entire rock situation when we finished seeing the movie, which was, what? You can't just rip them through the water like that. No. There was jagged rocks everywhere, you know? So, anyway, it is a... Let's just reiterate one more time. Piranha 3D is a remarkably stupid movie, all right? It's fun because it's gory and 3D and there's lots of boobs. But it is a dumbass movie, all right? And it is not worth $20 to $23 for at the cinema. If you are near a cinema that has it at a discounted price, maybe. Ritz isn't showing it, unfortunately, so that's why we didn't go there. But it is not worth $23.
Yeah, $25.
But it is one of those films that I will watch again on DVD because it was so much fun. It was so stupid. All right, let's do our list of five. This week on our list of five, in celebration of Four Lions, we have decided to do five films about terrorism. Now, this is a loose term. They might just feature an act of terror in them. They might be about the terrorists. They might be about fighting terrorists. And we've all kind of thrown our list together at the last minute, so it's not going to be pretty. But let's have a quick go at this and see how we go. We'll start with Celine. Mm-hmm. Number five. Film about terrorism.
Air Force One.
Oh, yeah.
Harrison Ford, baby. Just when he was getting a little too old.
Get off
the whole.
I just want my kids back. Oh, wait. No, that's another
The
movie.
Whole film is a little bit old, quite frankly.
just a little bit too old. A
it
little
was
bit
like,
too great.
Yeah, it's
when
like.
When he runs along, he kind of has that sore old man look to him. Like, oh, I'm really, this. I'm too old for this shit kind of thing.
It's kind of funny because it's like, it's the terrorist movie that should have come out in the 80s, but came out right at the end where it was actually becoming mildly politically offensive to have a film like that. I remember walking out of that cinema, I'm like, why did that feel wrong?
Okay, we have an addition.
They weren't Middle East. So
Well, yeah, that
they
was...
got away with it.
Because we can still be angry at Russians.
Yeah. That's right. Yeah. Totally. Russians are still the target.
Salt taught us one thing. We can still be pissed at the Russians.
Damn straight. Delta Knight in our chat room has something to add to our list from last week.
Oh, okay.
Our list from last week were best boobs in horror movies, okay? Yeah. Which is where we started getting kind of sleazy. Delta Knight says, "Oh, Dave, Josh, and Celine, I think one of the best horror movies I've seen with boobies in it is Return to the House on the Haunted Hill."
See, I've never seen Return. Neither. I've only seen the original. So, yeah,
but I tell you what, it's got really good boobies.
That's the remake, isn't it?
No. There is the remake was called House on the Haunted Hill. There is apparently a sequel.
Yeah. Well, there you go.
Yeah. Now, apparently
there is a movie called Zombie Boobs.
No, there's no movie. Oh, there's no movie called Zombie Boobs from the Booby Boob Boob. What the hell are you going on about numero zero?
I don't care.
All right, we're not about boobs this week, although I'm always about boobs, quite frankly, but not about boobs this week. Now, Josh, you weren't given time to prepare a list, so we'll skip you for this one.
I've got a...
We'll bring you into honorary mentions
at
the end.
You can do
okay?
it.
Okay? We'll bring you into honorary mentions at the end. My number five is The Dark Knight. Because, let's face it.
It is!
The Joker is all about
terror.
Film. And the scene on the boats at the end is an act of terrorism. So that would be my number five.
All of his acts are an act of terrorism.
Pretty much. Yeah. And the blowing up the hospital.
I'm not going to go into much detail about my number five because I know for a fact that it's on someone else's list. So I'll let them give it a much more praising thing than I will. It's actually at the bottom of my list because, you know, as much as I liked it, I think there's movies that did a lot better. Team America is my number five.
That film
was the first film that made it okay to laugh about terrorists. So for that, it goes in for an
Yeah, and I have to admit,
spot.
As ashamed as I am, I actually forgot about Team America
when I was making this list.
It would be my number one had I remembered it.
So I will let her go into far more detail.
So we'll come back to that. Your number four, Celine.
Is it your number four now? Or is it
I did my five. My number four
is Speed.
Speed, not bad.
Terrorists.
Yeah, dude, hostages on a bus can't slow down, can't go under 50 miles per hour. Keanu Reeves has to save the day with Sandra Bullock.
All right, dude.
And the main guy has like a scarred hand or something.
Dennis Hopper, man.
Dennis Hopper, man. That was Dennis Hopper when he
They always
knew
have
how
like physical ailments where they've like half their face is scarred or his hands, like all monkey. Yeah.
That's good. That's good. Yeah. I like that. Yeah. I like that. Right. My number four is Steven Spielberg's only foray into this, which was Munich, which the act of terrorism is actually the beginning of the film, and then it's about the retribution. But what a scene that opening scene is with the Munich Olympics and the terrorists coming in. It's just brutal. So that would be my number four.
And also a really good film.
Really good film. If you haven't seen it, it is the best thing Eric Mann has ever done. Hands down.
Yeah.
Sorry? No, not Hulk.
I said Hulk.
You said it just to piss us off.
Oh. I'm going to ban you from the studio.
I will jump this goddamn table, all right?
Hold me back. All right, Josh, you're number four.
My number four is a decidedly horrible film and also probably the end of a person's career. But it goes in my list. It goes in my list entirely because I, as a New Zealander, found it awesome to watch one of our own, Cliff Curtis, as a pseudo-Colombian Spanish something drug lord bad guy terrorist, which was Collateral Damage. That film was horrible.
That was a terrible film.
My God, so much explosions.
I always remember about Collateral Damage as well, is it was supposed to come out September 2001.
Yeah.
And the Two Towers came down, and they went, we pull that from release.
Well, that's
and you can
dude,
see
like,
why.
Actually, the first Spider-Man trailer that came out, there's a shot
too.
Where he builds a web between the Two Towers. It was an amazing
YouTube
shot. Guys. A really beautiful
you can actually see it on
too.
YouTube. It's actually, it still kicks around
and
YouTube.
And then that was gone.
Well, they actually pulled that not because of terrorism. They pulled that out because people might feel bad because of the Two Towers.
Oh, yeah, but because there's two
I'm depressed
two
now.
Towers.
It was a huge knee-jerk reaction. Anything that had the Two Towers, it was immediately just pulled from release everywhere. And that ad, they then re-released that Spider-Man ad about a month later. They just sliced the end off.
And
it didn't make any sense because they took out the punchline of the ad. But anyway. And it always made me wonder whether that film was supposed to be in the film or not.
Yeah.
Or whether it was just shot
for
the trailer. Because I wondered.
A lot of money went into that.
There was a lot of money in that one shot. And I always wondered if that was supposed to be in the film.
Cool. Okay.
Number three for Celine, Face Off.
Face Off?
I'm pretty sure there's a scene at the end where they blow a whole lot of shit up.
Yeah, but is it terrorism or is it just action film blow up?
It's terrorism. I read the synopsis thingo. Castor Troy is part of an organization. That makes terrorism.
I think it's slim, but I'll let you off. I think it's slim, but I'll let you off. All right, my number three is Arnold Schwarzenegger again. True Lies.
Oh, yes! Yes, brilliant.
Taking out the Middle Eastern terrorist action
and
with their nuclear weapon.
Jamie Lee Curtis's mini dress dance.
No.
She's such a man.
No. She is just like, as she moves, I can hear creaking sounds.
I'm sorry. She's
it's
hotness.
It's like every knee movement needs
she's
oil.
She's such a dude. I
she's
love her.
She's hotness, man. That body was wild.
Body, you just got to go like
no,
that.
No, totally.
Wild. I
moving
love
along.
Jamie Lee Curtis.
Moving along.
All right, Josh, you're number three.
Isn't it you? Wait.
I just need to realize.
Sorry. Yeah, shut up. This one actually goes on my list not because of, you know, sort of the depth of the terrorism or whatever. This goes in for the most likable terrorists in the world, which is Die Hard. That Asian guy downstairs who's holding the door and then reaches under and sheepishly grabs a chocolate bar and then sort of looks around to make sure no one's looking.
Moment was genius.
Exactly. Just like, just give that guy just a little bit of his own screen time.
So I thought you were going to say Hans Gruber for a minute there, because I also loved Hans Gruber. But he actually goes to point in the film of saying, who said we were terrorists? Yeah. So I love that. But I love the fact you picked him.
Exactly. No, it's that guy downstairs, because that guy's like a mercenary or something. I don't care. But, you know, he's a real person, man. And I associated that because of that scene. So that goes in there just for that scene alone.
Yeah, our chat room is complaining about the timing out because of the chat room and the lag. I do apologize, guys. Just bear with us here. Okay. All right,
It's funny that Josh mentions Die Hard as his number three, because Die Hard is my number two. Yeah. And I mean all of the Die Hard films. One,
all
two, three,
them.
And four. They all come into the terrorism genre, and they are all glorious.
Yeah. Fair enough. Yeah.
I think Die Hard should be on all of our lists.
I think Die Hard is brilliant.
It is definitely my number two.
I actually didn't put it on my list, funnily enough. But my number two is a film that none of you have probably seen. And I'm actually cheating a little bit here, because it's not actually a feature film. It is a television film. Mm. It's a three-hour event that happened in the 80s. It came out in 1986. Starred Peter Strauss, and it's called Under Siege, not to be confused with the Steven Seagal Under Siege. And it basically is about a terrorist attack on the U.S. Mm. And this film had some amazing sequences in it. And there is actually one sequence to this day I still don't know how they did. Mm. And it's one of those things, because this is all pre-digital. And there's a scene where the terrorist comes up to like an outside patio of a restaurant, pulls out a rocket launcher, and on the horizon is the Capitol building.
Yeah.
Fires the rocket launcher. You see the rocket fly through the air, one single shot, go all the way through the air and hit the dome of the Capitol building and blow the dome off the Capitol building.
And I said,
brilliant.
Does that series like end with like the U.S. city being in like a police state?
No.
That's the siege.
Now, this is Under Siege from the 80s. I'm trying to get hold of a copy. If anybody knows where I can get hold of a copy of this, of Under Siege, the Peter Strauss film, I want to see it again. So, but that is my number two, because that film still, I have flashes of thinking of that film. It's got things like terrorists driving trucks into army bases and blowing up. And so it was really ahead of its time.
Yeah.
Way ahead of its time. Okay, Josh, you're number two.
I'm changing mine to The Siege because I just thought, and I almost did a Celine. I actually looked at it and realized that I too quickly jumped to this film, which is actually more a film about an invasion as opposed to terrorism itself. So I'm going to say The Siege.
The Siege.
Because as much as that film is not necessarily kind of, it is very ho-hum, the level of terrorism that goes on in that film, and then the fact that it kind of flips over on its head. I really enjoyed that film. Yeah,
We'll come back to The Siege in just a minute. we'll have a little bit of a discussion. Number two, Celine.
No, I've already done. We've just
done. Oh, you've just done that. Number one, sorry. Number one
is Team America.
Ah, yeah, of course. And we've already talked about it. We know
just
that this
because,
is...
like, it's a funny film about terrorism. Like Four Lions, they've actually taken the piss out of terrorism.
Yeah.
And all of these other movies we've mentioned are all action films or dramas that take terrorism really, really seriously. And this film just takes the piss out of it.
And
it takes the piss out of Americans. They take the piss out of themselves. They take a piss out of extremists. They just kind
bad
of...
intelligence.
Yeah, they just, you know, say fuck you to everybody. And that's what I love about Matt.
What I love about it is a completely offensive film that nobody took offense to.
Offensive film, but also really intelligent.
It was far too intelligent.
It was and it was, well, sorry.
It was all puppets.
And it was puppets,
and the fact
absolutely.
That it was puppets, too, as well. That just, like, the thing about that I love about Matt Stone and Trey Parker is that they are so ridiculous and so in your face and so much potty humor, yet they're really smart. And they know how to do this shit and get away with it. They know how to be totally and utterly offensive, but in a really intelligent way. And for Americans, that's actually quite impressive. I know that sounds horrible, Woo! But it's that kind of almost British sensitivity.
To a degree.
To a degree.
To a degree.
With lots of potty humor.
With lots of potty humor
in it.
Anyway.
My number one, funnily enough, you mentioned it, Josh, is The Siege.
Oh, okay.
Which is why I said we'll come back to this, because I actually think The Siege is a great film.
Mm.
And I think it is a great film for its statement about not so much the acts of terror,
but of
our reactions to the acts of terror. And it actually has that one line in it, which I think it resonated so hard with me, which is where Denzel Washington, they're torturing one guy in a room who they think is a terrorist, and they're waterboarding him and everything else. And Denzel Washington says, as soon as you change anything, as in chip away at our rights or take away anything from us, the terrorists have won.
You know?
And so as soon as we have shown fear to the point where we make changes, like bringing in the Patriot Act and so forth, we have lost. And they have won. And that, to me, was the entire sum of that film, was the fact that the overreaction to the terrorist actions was completely dropping down a police state like a hammer and taking away everything that we were trying to protect. And so I think it's I think it's actually a very important film. And more so, the fact that it came out when it came out.
Oh, yeah.
Because it kind of preempted 9/11.
Oh, dude, absolutely.
And you sit
it
there
was
and go,
amazing when you watched that film, because I watched that film again, like just after September 11, and I basically just went, wow, this is so scarily on the mark when it happened.
Mm.
And I was just like, that is insane.
And you would think it was a post 9/11 film.
Exactly.
And it's not. And that's the scariest part of it, is that Edward Zwick, who went on to make things like Blood Diamonds and so forth, was so on the ball. He knew exactly what the reactions would be. And he was nailed it.
Yeah.
I mean, this whole thing with the torture and the Patriot Act and all this stuff.
And rounding people up.
Rounding them up, putting them in fenced camps and the whole, you sit there and go, wow, you really were right on the money. Right on the money with this.
Yeah.
So that is my number one because of that. I don't think it's a perfect film, but I think it's a really good film.
Mm.
And I think it should be seen. I think people have kind of left it in the dust. Your number one, Josh.
My number one is actually because when I watched this film, it kind of defeated in my head the I don't want to say American, that kind of 9/11 reaction to terrorism.
Mm-hmm.
And it basically regrounded the concept of what terrorism was for me. And also the fact that all of this stuff had underlying things that the press and the media and, you know, sort of the American government at the time, you know, that sort of Bush government and so forth, had put into our head. And it sort of like made me think differently about it, which was Traitor. Which
I still have not seen.
Yeah, Traitor. Traitor is one of those films that when you kind of get to the end of it, you kind of sit there and go, wow, that's a really different look at everything. And it's sort of, when you sort of see him as the undercover player and sort of, you know, the way that sort of he's dealing with both sides. He's dealing with the people trying to stop it and the people themselves that are doing the acts and sort of the balancing act of that and sort of, you know, sort of how close he gets and the people that are involved in this. You sit there and you're just like, that's a very different look at everything relating to terrorism. And I know that it's a bit different to the way we would usually finish it because it's
I think it's a really good
riotous
look. Dave has been trying to get me to see Traitor for ages. So it's one of those films where I really do need to see it.
You've seen it? Yeah, no. And so Josh agrees.
I've seen Traitor. I didn't want to see it because of Don Cheadle, but
He sells it.
It was good. He was good in it.
So. Yeah. No, yeah, he sells it really well. It's a very interesting film.
Now, we've had a couple in our chat room.
Oh, dude, the one that I wanted to see straight away, and I left it because I didn't want it to overshadow what I said, but I think he is totally right, and it deserves to go to the top of all of our lists, which is Swordfish.
Swordfish, yes.
Swordfish is just one of those movies where you're like, wow, this
is... Delta Knight, well done.
This is an amazing... It's like terrorism concept is just this concept of this guy's like,
I'm paid like America.
I know, but not him. John Travolta's character, where it's like, I'm paid to create terrorism by America. And I'm just like, wow, you are just batshit insane.
And we also had another one, which is one I haven't seen yet, which is Callison said they'd like to add The Men Who Stare at Goats, which I haven't seen yet. So I actually did not know it was about terrorists, quite frankly.
The book is better than the movie.
I've been told the film isn't very good, but I still want to see it.
Yeah, it's good.
The trailer actually made me laugh out loud. So.
Yeah.
And speaking of True Lies, because that was one of my mentions, you already mentioned it, but Body of Lies... I thought it was okay.
Body of Lies wasn't bad. Yeah.
No, but at the same time, like, there are a lot of aspects. So, like, in the same sort of vein as that sort of traitor-esque kind of a thing was that whole kind of, like, very interesting look at
really
Mark Strong was great.
No, Body of Lies was very good. I think we should also throw in some honorary mentions. We could throw in Hurt Locker, which has some great moments in it, with just scenes of tension, the way they handle it. And then I would also like to throw in my honorary mentions. I'm going to throw in Team America because I didn't think about it for my list, but that is just brilliant.
As a mini series, Generation Kill, if anybody's seen it.
I haven't seen it yet. Yeah. I actually own it downstairs.
It's not necessarily just about terrorism. It deals a lot about the war as well and what's happening with that and the psychology of the soldiers. I can't believe you haven't seen it. It is fucking brilliant.
It's another one. Dude, add it to the list.
Both of you. Waste of time.
Yeah, I need to go see it.
Oh my God, all three of you. I'm waiting for
In my defense, the only reason I haven't seen it yet is because I'm waiting for the next time JB drops the TV series down to $32 for the entire series on Blu-ray. So when that happens, it is amazing.
It is one of those. Same guys who did The Wire. Yeah, it is one of those shows.
But you haven't seen The Wire.
No, I haven't. It's apparently totally based on real events because the Rolling Stone writer who was with them wrote a book about it. And the book apparently nearly got banned because he named generals and soldiers by their names, saying this is exactly what they said and quoted them. And the US Army just kicked up a massive
stink about it.
Yeah, they lost their mind because he was saying this is what it's like in Iraq. And they were going, oh, no, it's not. I don't know anything about that. That never happened, and that's what makes this miniseries so amazing, because there are so many moments where something will happen and you'll literally sit there and just go, like, I cannot believe that they fucking did that. It's amazing. I'd recommend it to anybody and everybody.
Fantastic. All right, now we're going
to... So there's a bit of a segue
there. I've got to segue you off because we're actually running way over time as usual. And really? I actually didn't think we would. I thought we'd actually fly through this episode, but we do have one last thing I want to talk about really quickly. And I just need to mention it because it's opened. And because it's opened, we should talk about it. But that is, of course, the Australian film Tomorrow When the World Began. We didn't actually do this as... War began. Thank you. That's what I meant to say. Tomorrow when the war began. Now, we didn't actually throw this in as our feature review because, quite frankly, Josh didn't want to see it.
Wasn't going to happen.
No.
And as a disclaimer for that, but since you put me on the stand for that, the reason I don't want to see this is because, believe it or not, even though you know that I am a very harsh reviewer and I like to be very violent towards things, if there is a level of biasness in me, it's like I don't mind reviewing things like music or something like that, but I wouldn't review a country album because I don't like the style of music. So therefore, me reviewing it would be best left to somebody that's more in line
and
for that.
And that's fair enough.
And I'm still reeling over the terrible Australian film The Loved Ones, which I think is a disgrace to every... It is quintessentially everything that I have wrong with the Australian film industry.
And our review gets pushed back yet again because I just found out that the release date has been pushed back again. It's now coming out in November.
I haven't seen it. But it has literally affected me to the point where I have stipulated that it is going to be a while before I can watch an Australian film because it is just every cliche about Australian film chucked into a movie and given a bad storyline and bad acting and bad wash, everything you can imagine. And at the moment, I just can't see it. And so I can't be fair, so therefore I'm avoiding it.
And that's fair. And that's why I thought we'd just throw it in here at the end as a micro review. Before I talk about it, I have just excerpt from the trailer. I'm not even going to play the whole trailer, just an excerpt from the trailer. So this is Tomorrow When the War Began.
Mama! Mama!
Hello?
There's no dial tone.
What is going on?
If anything happens, run.
Let's start acting like soldiers.
Okay, so...
What do your instincts tell you?
That it's time to go to war.
Okay.
Ugh. Horrible line.
All right, so Josh's vile... bile... aside. Josh's bile aside.
I'm not saying anything.
I went to see the film on Thursday night because those who have listened to this show often enough know that I have actually made it very clear that I'm not a huge fan of the Australian film industry. And I've also said that I kind of have a policy which I don't pay for Australian films at the cinema. However, when this film cropped up, and we start finding out information about it, like it's got a $30 million budget, like it's a big action film, like it's got these action set pieces, like they're trying something different than their usual crap that they produce. I thought, I can't just not see it. I kind of have to at least give them a chance if they're going to try something different, because that's the argument that I always say. If you try something different, you might be more successful. So they tried something different. My opinion of this film is that it is decidedly average. Maybe just a slight smidge above average. It is an okay film. You watch it, you go, it's all right. I didn't look at my watch. I didn't wiggle around in my seat too much. It kept my attention. There were some things about this film that didn't work. Really, really badly didn't work. Some of the acting really doesn't work. Talking to Josh before, there's an Asian boy you see in the trailer who obviously loves the main girl in the lead, and he keeps trying to give these little speeches where, of course, they have a double meaning where he's really talking about her, and they could have been nice little sides, but he delivers them all with this cold stare to her, like really he's some stalker-ish. Kind of like some sort of stalker, you know.
And it's,
you notice the subtext in his head is, "Do you get it? Do you get it? Do you understand what I'm saying?" You know,
it's like so it's intense,
and so that doesn't work, you know. But some of the set pieces are very nice. My biggest issue with this film is that all of that action that you're seeing in the trailer is literally the last 10 minutes of the film. Mm. And there's a long buildup to get you to the point where they are the Wolverines from Red Dawn. Mm. And that's
Pale comparison.
But yeah. That's what they're leading up to. And the minute they all arm up and stand on the hilltop like you see in the trailer, that's the end of the film. Right. And so you sit there and go, but that's the film I want to see, you know? So there is a lot of
But build. are they cuz the not the bo- the books were a series.
The plan are is they that they want to make a series.
I would like to say, as somebody who's read the first three, no, it doesn't. You keep waiting for it to happen. Like okay. I read them as
a kid, and I remember really liking them.
Yeah,
I was 13 at the time though. So.
Yeah, look, and the girl. The different second different perspective. The second and the third book, I was reading them literally because I expected what you see in the last bit with them basically saying we're going to go to war on these people to actually happen in full detail. Mm-hmm. And it kind of comes in sporadic little drops, yeah. And I never find it that impressive. So.
I think that the stereotyping of the characters was a little bit predictable. I thought that the action sequences were okay. I think
acting. Talk to me about acting.
The acting is moderate to awful. There's no sensational.
Okay. Right.
So, the biggest surprise in the film, though, was Caitlin, the girl from Neighbors, yeah. Who actually, you sit there and go, ooh, you're actually working. You're actually trying to do something, and she actually is one of the more
competent
actors in the set. Now, I hate her on Neighbors, and yet she actually pulls it off a little bit here, you know? She's not the best in the cast, but she does okay. You know, she's one of the better ones in the cast. There is one character in it, and I don't know if he's in the book or not, but he's the stoner kid, Chris, who is hysterical. And he is really funny. Mm. He grates a little bit by the end of the film, but his first meeting with them is this monologue where he talks about how he discovered it was all happening, and the way he delivers it is hysterical. He's like, I was totally baked. And he is just very funny because he is this genius who is just roasted, you know, completely, and a complete burnout, and doesn't know how to deal with the situation except by smoking more joints, you know. And so he's actually quite funny. It has moments. I don't think it's for everyone, but if you would like to see Australians attempt something a little bit different, this is a step in the right direction. I would like to take it further. Mm. It definitely benefits from the fact that Stuart Beatty, who is an Australian but has worked in America for the last 20 years, has an American sensibility to him. He's the guy who wrote Collateral, the Tom Cruise film. He's 20 years as a screenwriter in America. This is his directorial debut. And he brings a little bit to the table. I don't know if it's going to be a big success. I don't know if it deserves to be a big success, but it does deserve to open, and if it can make some money, they might actually try things like this again. And that's really what it comes down to, is I would like them to try more stuff like this, because more practice, they might get it right, you know? We might get away from kitchen sink drama and all the other crap that they produce in this country. So in talking about Not Quite Hollywood with Brad again, it really did bring home the fact that we made much more entertaining films 30 years ago, you know, and it'd be nice to go back to something that was like that rather than keep regurgitating Lantana and Peaches and whatever East or whatever that thing was called. And so you sit there and go, I'm just bored of Australian films and everything Australians are doing, and we really need to try and break out of that and do something.
Honorable mention for a good Australian film.
Yep.
The Boys Are Back.
Which I have not seen yet.
Which neither of you have seen. I was incredibly surprised. I was expecting a tacky kitchen sink lantana-esque drama, and I was very, very surprised.
Although I love Clive Owen. So.
Fantastic. There's a little boy in it who is really young, like 7 or 8, who plays his son. And he's an absolutely fantastic actor. There are scenes where I just wanted to cry, and I very rarely cry in films. And like, there's one scene where he's throwing a tantrum, and the whole thing is he's upset, he's lost his mom, he just wants a hug. And that whole scene is just so beautiful, just the way Clive Owen deals with it. And he's kind of like, I don't know what he wants. And then he imagined his wife saying, oh, he just wants a hug. Just give
him
a
hug. I must see
this
film.
He's just upset. And I think as someone who has a child, it would be interesting to watch that kind of get that perspective on it.
As a linchpin, though, No. I'm just saying, can you really class that as a fully Australian film when your lead actor is Clive Owen?
So what?
Oh, no, of course you can. Of course you
so
can.
What?
No,
there's I'm sorry.
Can we call Pirates of the Caribbean American film? It's got an Australian in it.
No, look, I don't mean from that point of view. I just mean if one of your leads, you know, sort of thing, and it's a very different kind of... Because, I mean, would it be the same kind of personality? Does he do an Australian accent?
No, he's British. He plays a British person. And there is a scene where they go over to Britain because he has a son over there.
Why is everybody getting really...
No.
I'm just asking.
No, I think it's a great question because what constitutes a nationality film?
Exactly, the whole
Superman
reason.
The movie, 1979, Superman the movie is the quintessential American film, yet it's British. It's actually a British film that just happens to be about an American character and set in America.
That's an example of what I was talking about. It's like when you have kind of the main sort of focus.
But the difference with The Boys Are Back is it's Australian.
I haven't seen it, so this is Australian filmmakers, Australian location, Australian cast, with the exception of Clive Owen and a couple of other characters. I know nothing about it.
It's like when Jindabyne came out. Jindabyne actually has an Irish and an American lead, but it's set here and it's an Australian film. It's produced by Australia. It just has these two. That's in that thing.
I didn't actually feel that much. Like I didn't feel like Australian film esque about that film because I just the
but
characters.
That's a good thing. Yeah. Isn't it?
That's a good thing.
No, exactly.
Yeah.
But that's what I'm saying.
That means
it's like
that we can make movies that aren't totally retarded.
Now there's a couple issues. Back to Tomorrow When the War Began because we have to wrap this up. But back to Tomorrow When the War Began, I got to just stress a couple of things. I have a couple of issues. Now I've got a couple of people saying, "Oh, I really want to see it," in the chat room. They're saying because I want to know, you know, what the talk is about and so on. Before you go see it, here are a couple things to consider. Now, this is slightly spoilerish territory. We're not going to spoil anything major, but slightly spoilerish territory. I have a few issues. The first issue I have is, if there's going to be a major invasion of this country, why are they invading buttfuck Australia?
I think the better question was raised in, I think it was the Sydney Herald or something like that. It was a sub-magazine, so the ones that you find inside, where someone actually pointed out the thing is, if we were being invaded, where the fuck was our military?
Well, that's right. In this entire film, you see one. Yeah, well, there is that.
Yeah.
You see one Australian plane, and they actually all get to the window and go, "It's one of ours," and then it gets shot down.
We're really pissed, aren't we?
Where were they going? It was like they're just flying past.
So basically, this film, there's actually one point where they're very, very clever in the sense that they don't actually talk about who's invading. It's some sort of coalition. They are Asian, but you're kind of figuring it's China, Korea, maybe Indonesia, all combined together, and there is this.
They're not clear about that in the book anyway.
Sorry, what was that?
I said like they need to. Their army is bigger than our.
Well, the loose story that they kind of put across on this little radio brief thing that's in the background, which basically says something along the lines of the excuse for the invasion was they were trying to equalize it out the region. We have all these natural resources we're not sharing, and they've invaded us to take our resources, basically. And the plan is to stabilize the entire region over time, and that's why the invasion took place. It's loose, right? It's really weak. My question is, they say the three major ports taken are the one where they're at, which is near Wirrawee, right? And two other buttfuck Australia little ports. And you sit there and go, they're not invading Sydney or Darwin or, you know, Adelaide or any of the major centers. They are literally invading the outback, right?
Wouldn't that be, I'm sorry, Dave, but on the military front, as someone that's very into military thing, those would be staging points.
Sure,
sorry.
But there's no talk about, okay, they're staging points, but as they're being staged, that's when the Australian military starts coming in from the major centers. What? We never get any of that, you know?
If there's three places, and I don't know about the movies, but the books are very clear on the fact that there's a lot about as soldiers.
they talk about these three major staging points, and they're all in the middle of buttfuck nowhere. And the second part to this, is that we are in buttfuck nowhere. So why the hell do they all speak with such lovely cultured voices?
Yeah.
They would be country bumpkins, awkers. There is not an awker amongst them. There is not a strongly...
And why is there an Asian kid all the way out in bloody...
Well, they run a Chinese restaurant, of course. I told you, stereotypes galore, okay?
That's really tacky.
But they're all these stereotypes. All the characters are stereotypes. There's the Wog boy gets in trouble with the law. There's pretty girl. It's like Breakfast Club and War, you know?
I told you that was what it was, dude.
It really is that. And then, look, it has moments. It has okay stuff in it, but it's not for everyone's taste. Mm. It is, as I say, an average film. Mm. That is a big step up for me. Mm. All right? I should be sitting there going, it's shit, just take, get rid of it. It is average. All right? Yeah. Now let's see if we can go the next stage. All right? That's all I'm saying is let's see if we can go the next stage. Not necessarily with a sequel to this. Let's just see if we can make another big budget film that might sell overseas. That would be nice. Yeah. All right. We're going to have to finish this up, though, because we are way over time. Okay? Mm. So let's finish this up and just basically say, if you agree or disagree with anything that we had to say today, you can send your email to feedback@geekactually.com. Mm. We would love to hear everything you have to say. Like Snake sending in his email, send us your emails. Let us know what you think of what we are saying, what we are doing. Do you agree? Mm. Do you want to have a film that you want us to review? Whatever. You can also voicemail us at 02-801-1-3167. Leave us a message if it's entertaining enough, we'll play it on the show. Mm. Okay? Now, we are going to have new Geek Actually stuff on cafepress.com.au/geekactually soon. The cartoon work has now been delivered, and we are going to talk about that in the after show. So we'll come back to that. We have a fan page, facebook.com/geekactually. You can come and follow us on that. And make sure you do check out our other shows, which are Tech Actually and the Geek Actually After Show. And remember, we go out live. You can watch everything. We record all three shows back to back, starting at 12 p.m.-ish. Today was 20 past. But starting at 12 p.m.-ish and straight through to the three shows to their conclusion. 12 p.m. Australian Eastern Standard Time, UTC plus 10, geekactually.com/live. Now, Josh, take it away.
Well, anybody that has not seen the show, we also have a site called rawdlc.com. We do news, opinions, and other stuff. Head over and check that out. There's a whole bunch of new articles up and a big week planned as well next week. And we also do a live show, which goes out 8 p.m. on Wednesday. That's it.
Cool. Now, just very quickly before I continue on, chat room says, Delta Knight says, I want them to do a top five techie movies. Your wish is granted. Next week, top five techie movies. Okay? It makes it easy for us.
Yeah. All right. Thank you.
And Callicent that says, we need a new Crocodile Dundee. No truer words have ever been spoken. We need...
Not Crocodile Dundee.
What we need is a new Australian film that appeals to a universal international audience and can take $350 million.
$3.50
at the box office. Okay?
Moving right along, though, I want to say one thing, though. We don't need a new Crocodile Dundee just from the point of view that I think Australians are trying very hard at the moment to establish themselves as something else apart from the background yobbo. So,
human beings. Intelligent human beings.
Exactly. So as much as I would like to see a new movie that hits as hard as that, please not another character as iconic as Steve Irwin kind of background bushwalker.
Yeah. Point taken. Okay, top five techie movies next week.
All right, done.
All right, now, before we go on, a little bit of plugging. First single plug is the moviefanhouse.com. They produce two wonderful podcasts, Movie Fan Cast and Right This Instant. And as I said in the tech show, I have a personal plug here because I'm on Right This Instant. So go find it and have a listen to it. And that's our friends Brad, Jesse, and Charlie. And you can go listen to their shows by going to moviefanhouse.com or searching for their shows on iTunes. And also The Real Junkies, which you can find over at weekendronan.com or search for them, R-E-E-L, on iTunes. They are a lot of fun. They review films while drunk. So go figure. Awesome. So they are a lot of fun. And we also have in the studio, in the house, right this moment, Josh Spencer, who is a cartoonist who is wonderful, and he's been chiming in here and there, and he's going to be our guest on the after show, so we'll have more talking then.
There's his hand
for the live viewers. And Josh can be found at attackninja.blogspot.com. You can find out all about his work. There, that's a better camera. You can probably sneak in on this camera over there.
Sorry?
There it is. All right. So do check out his work.
My head's
really big. All right. With all of that said, I think we're done.
Yep. I need...
We need to take a short break.
Bathroom.
Okay. Now, to finish us off, we don't have the soundtrack to... what film did we review today? Four Lions. We don't have the soundtrack to Four Lions, unfortunately. But I happened to re-watch John Hughes' Some Kind of Wonderful this week, and the 80s soundtrack kind of caught my attention. And I really like, in particular, the opening piece of music, which is a drum solo goes into this kind of electronical music, but it's not on the soundtrack. And I thought, where the hell is this? Bit of research, found out it was a group called Propaganda, and I've sourced the track.
Oh, God.
So we're going to play a little bit of 80s electronica to go out today. This is the opening track from Some Kind of Wonderful. In the meantime, go see more movies. You don't see enough movies, and all of life's questions are answered in the movies, and we will see you all next week.